Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast, presented today by the Steeler Gang and their new release, the Steeler Gang Gold Beer, brought to you by Rivertown Brewing. My name is Joe Kuzma, and today, folks, I have a very, very special guest that I am very geeked up and excited to have here on the show. Former Pittsburgh Steelers kicker, two-time Super Bowl champion, and second all-time scorer in Steelers history, just behind the great Gary Anderson. 919 points. Does it seem like you scored that much? Mr. Jeff Reed, how you doing?
Hey, how are you? It's funny. Thanks for having me on, first of all, and to answer that question, It's funny. I mean, you get through the years, you know, you averaged about, you know, 100 to 120, and I played 9 full years, so it makes sense. You know, and you always look back and you're like, man, if I could have played one more season or even half a season, maybe I would be at 1,000 points, you know, but we always have those. If you're a competitor, you always look back at certain things and wish you could have done this or that, but I'm very, very grateful for my time in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it seems like just about anything, even like here with the things we do at Steel City Underground, it's like it's never enough. We want more and more and more. I think it's just a human nature thing. But how you been and what have you been up to lately?
I'm very good, man. I was after football, I trained for a few years, trained hard as if I was still playing, hoping and praying I would get back into the league somehow. It didn't work out. So then I went into the car business. And glad I did it because I learned a lot, and I know I won't get ripped off when I buy a car. but because I was the finance director, so I ran the entire finance department, and I was in charge of all the money with the accounting people. So I saw behind the scenes of not just, you know, going in. Everyone knows the long process, but you don't really know, like, what an MSRP is. Versus what you should be paying, you know, it's crazy. I mean, like you can negotiate all day, but in the end, you still don't really know what kind of deal you're negotiating. And I saw that side of it, and it was an unhealthy job, though. Nothing against the people I worked for or with. I love them all, but I was sitting in a chair, you know, 70-75 hours a week. You don't have any Saturdays off. I mean, that's your game day. And so, I mean, I'm single with no kids, or else it'd have been really, really, really tough to even stay in it for 3 years. And I stayed in it for 3 years. I gained a lot of weight. It's very unhealthy. Left the car dealership, didn't burn a bridge. They've asked me to come back numerous times. But I needed to look out for myself, my health, and hopefully something else would fall on my plate that I could make a little money and enjoy doing. And so that's what I'm doing now. So since then I've lost 35 pounds in 10 months and feel way better. I actually sleep. And I'm in the cannabis industry. I do a lot of things, but that being said, it is the legal side of the cannabis plant, the hemp side, the male side.
Okay.
And the CBD oils and different things like that are products. And, I love the product and what it's done for me personally, my parents, my sister, and I consider myself, when every day I wake up, I want it to help change at least one life a day. And with this product, you can actually do that, and you can make some good money in it too. So that's what I'm doing now, and I love it. I work for myself. I don't have to answer to everyone. I'm not used to being on the phone as much as I am now, because I have customers and that just use the product, some partners that are a part of the business with me in different parts of the country, not just in North Carolina where I live. A lot of my affiliates and partners and people I'm building my team around are up in Newcastle, PA, Pittsburgh, PA. So, I mean, it's I love what I do. I mean, I travel a lot now. I'm out of town tomorrow for a few days and the following week for a few days. But, you know, that's how you build a business. And then in the end, I'm a healthier person, and I'm taking a product and selling a product that is unbelievable.
That sounds like an incredible story that would lead a lot of people into another opinion about decriminalization. I wanted to say something real quick, though. You're still based in North Carolina, correct?
Yeah, I'm in Charlotte.
Okay, cool. Part of that, too, you were saying Newcastle. I'm actually a stone throw away. I actually used to work in Newcastle. I live over in Youngstown, Ohio, currently. Less than an hour from Pittsburgh, about 20, 25 minutes in Newcastle. Sometimes I got to drive over there just to buy the Bud Light Steelers cans because they don't always carry them here in Ohio. And funny I mentioned that because we're going to be talking about beer and some special beer cans here with the Steeler Gang beer. But, I mean, it kind of working with the cannabis industry, I'm sure you may have some opinions maybe one way or another about NFL players and drug testing and things like that. If you care to opine on that, I'm sure our listeners would love to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah, the drug testing I totally get. I mean, you can't be on – shouldn't be on steroids, stuff like that, because you can literally kill somebody on that field. It's a dangerous sport. But when it comes to, like, I've never been an advocate of marijuana. I've never done it. But I understand now, after doing research on what I do on the cannabis plant, I understand how medicinal it can be. And I don't know. I mean, they only do one drug test a year. And it's in training camp, and pretty much if you're not in the program, which that means you got caught smoking it, then you can smoke it anyway. So I don't know why it's illegal anyway. And a lot of the guys do for pain, I can't tell you how many different pills I was throwing in my body to feel better, to play, practice, everything. But that's athletes everywhere, not NFL, everywhere. That's what athletes do, because we're thinking like a huge dose of ibuprofen works a miracle, so we can make it through the next 4 hours of our game. And really all it's doing is destroying your liver and your kidneys and everything else. And then, but, that with this new, the CBD oil, hemp oil, that should be legalized in the NFL for sure, because it's legal in all 50 states. So I don't know why it's not. I mean, it's legal. And I know some PGA golfers that take it. I know some hockey players that take it. It's legal in the NHL. So I don't understand why this product, especially what I'm involved with, is not legal, because there's no detectable amounts of THC in it. So, but as far as when we look at the football thing, I'm not an advocate of any kind of drug. I would be scared. I would be scared if, I've come into a bathroom in a bar or something and you're like, oh crap, and then I kind of get out of there quick. So I do understand the drug testing, because all street drugs and stuff are absolutely you should not be taking. But as far as the marijuana side of it, it'll probably be legalized fairly soon.
Yeah, it's a big topic right now, and whatever side that anyone's on, you kind of see. So some of it's silly, and then some of it, you got to be careful like anything else. I think it's more or less that it's just not legal in a lot of areas. Like Pennsylvania, for example, it's always a topic. Ohio, it's always a topic. So they don't want players getting in any type of legal trouble. Maybe those sentiments will change in the future. You're absolutely right about like ibuprofen or an Aleve or anything like that. And then the thing is, if you take too much, you start with one or two ibuprofen, and you're up to three, up to four, and then that happens with pretty much any type of drugs that are like that. So it's good to try and keep athletes clean. But the NFL, it's a grind when it comes to the schedule and everything like that. The interesting side of things, though, is I don't know how often it is that I have an opportunity or anyone has an opportunity to listen to an NFL kicker and that kind of side, because you hear a lot about, linebackers or running backs and these guys throwing themselves at each other. But, kicking is kind of a grind in and of itself, too. Am I right?
Yeah. With kicking, obviously, when I played, I had pads, shoulder pads, and a helmet on. So I was obviously going to stick my nose in some tackles, or at least try. When you got a running back getting hit, 50 times a game, linebackers every play, offensive linemen absorbing blows. That's obviously not what we go through as kickers. But 99% of those guys can't kick themselves in the head either. And that's not a normal motion. It's a lot of torque involved. a lot of torque on your hips. My left side is, you know, I've had three surgeries on my left side of my body, which is my plant leg side. And it just absorbs so much torque and pressure. And, you know, punting is still kicking, and it's a hell of a talent. But it is more straightforward motion. Kicking, you're coming from the side. There's not really any straight on kickers anymore. And that definitely went, so it's more torque on your body than punting for sure. So, you know, it's the pain side. I mean, I've torn my labrum and my hip. I've had two ankle surgeries. I've had a torn bicep. I mean, like, so, I mean, and the bicep was not from football. It was afterwards, but still, I mean, it's, those things, it's a very painful job. And when some guys try to, like, you know, joke around or something before practice, and you know, say, hold one for me, Jeff, let me kick this, and they go kick it, and whether it's ugly or good, you know, the next day they're like sore, and they're like, dude, you know, because they're not used to that. As if I was hitting, you know, 50 plays a game, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed probably. So, you know, it's kind of two sides of that.
Yeah, it's like the football-shaped deal, like building up the calluses or whatever. And, yeah, I could certainly see that, too. They always do, like, the Heinz Field thing, the what do they call it, the fan blitz or whatever, like, around yeah. draft time. And they let yeah. people come out and kick, and it's only, like, maybe, what, like 20 yards, if that. And I know just myself, just wearing jeans or something to that, I've thought to myself, I played soccer, I officiate soccer, you know, I did it at a high level for many years. So I'm very familiar with soccer style kickers and things of that nature, and I'm looking at people out there, I'm like, man, some of these people are gonna get themselves hurt. I'm like, yeah. I wonder if they get to sign a waiver or something. But speaking of something that's maybe not commonplace, I know there's a lot of kickers who wear two shoes, and I cannot recall for the life of me if you wore two different style of shoes or not, or maybe give some insight as to why kickers might want to do something like that.
Yeah, I wore two different shoes. I wore a football cleat on my left foot, which is my plant leg, and a soccer cleat on my right, which I kicked with. Also, on my kicking foot, my normal size shoe is 10.5. I wore 9.5 because you want your foot pretty much not smashed uncomfortably in there, but where there is no room for it to breathe. So if you do miss hit a kick, you're still getting your foot. You're not just kicking off your shoe. So that was the reasoning behind that. Our field back when I was playing was very muddy, even if it was a nice day. It was slick. So I had to find a way coming from these Bermuda grass fields, like golf greens in North Carolina, I'm used to kicking on. Because in high school and college, I wore my soccer cleats because the plant was great. It was either a turf field or great grass that I played on. I didn't know really the difference. When I got to Pittsburgh and played in all those conditions, on my plant foot, I had to have a screw-in cleat because I had to change the length of the screw-ins for my plant to get my plant solid. So that being said, it was a learning curve for sure. And you know, it's not easy for running backs to cut back on that. I mean, it wasn't easy for receivers to run routes, and sometimes if it was muddy enough and, you know, and not in good shape, then the offensive linemen get, you know, pushed back like they're on ice skates. So, you know, all the cleats are a huge thing for everyone. I mean, we used to change cleats all the time in the middle of games because maybe the weather changes, or now the field's getting a little sloppier because we played half a game on it, you know, stuff like that.
Same difference with a turf field as well. Would you still wear the football cleat for the plant leg?
Yeah, I wore the football cleat, but it wasn't a screw-in, of course, on turf. It was just a molded bottom, but it was a football shoe, yes, and the soccer shoe was on the right foot.
That's very cool. One thing I was going to ask is, and you kind of alluded to already, is I was wondering about conditions of kicking in Heinz Field. Now, I've been down on the field several times for warm-ups and things of that nature, and they've since closed in part of the end where the scoreboard is, but you could still tell the wind whips around in that open end, and you know, it wasn't anything like a sure thing to attempt any type of kick into that open end. What's your experience like? What can you tell our listeners about kicking at Heinz Field and why people aren't kicking like Graham Gano comes out like a week or two ago and kicks a 65-yarder? I don't think that's ever going to happen at Heinz Field.
Well, it can. The thing about it is at Heinz Field, I mean, it's you know, obviously isn't where we played our home games, so you had to figure out a way to make them. That's just the way it is, and that's like just not to get off the your question, but that's like playing in Miami and in Oakland when the baseball dirt's there. Oh, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I still never figured out how to kick on that, and you know, that was just something like if the Athletics or you know the I guess the Marlins or whoever was down there, if they make the playoffs, I mean, their field's like that majority of the year. So it's that's very tricky. And that's I actually would ask the other kicker, you know, you have any pointers? And he said, it's all about how you kick too, because it's I attack the ball. Some guys are finesse guys. Boswell, for instance, is more of a finesse guy. Like he's more upright than I was when I kicked. I was more of an attacking guy. And that matters, you know, for footing. And plus, I weigh more than most of those kickers do, you know. So that you have to factor that in too. But on the field, I mean, you really can't take anything for granted anywhere you kick, even inside, because you know there's wind everywhere unless you have a dome. There are elements everywhere. It snows a lot of places. Even in Miami, it can be 90 degrees, which is great. But you know they got that dirt sometimes. They got hurricanes coming through there. I mean, like, it's never easy to kick anywhere. Miami's obviously on the beach, so there's gonna be wind. I mean, every game, that's just how it is. But the thing about Heinz Field is there's an actual wind tunnel. If you kick the ball, if you're going towards the open end, and you hit it off your toe a little bit as a right footer, it's definitely gonna go right, because that's the way the wind typically goes. It blows from the from left to right normally. In that direction, and if you crush a ball and try to cut through the wind, if it hits the wind tunnel, you can, and the ball definitely travel. I mean, I can see guys early in the season, you know, making. There's a couple guys in the league now. Baltimore's kicker Tucker, Graham Gano. Those are the top two strongest guys in the NFL as far as leg strength, and they can make a 65 yarder on our field. It's not probably going to happen, but they could certainly do it. I mean, because there's some really strong kickers out there.
Yeah, I would. But yeah, maybe clarifying that. Maybe coaches don't want to make that decision to go for that long and then give the opposing team great field position if it's missed.
Right.
But for maybe a game winner or something, like Dan Bailey and I think Chris Boswell have the long, I want to say it's 53 or 54, but there was a pit kicker that just did a 55-yarder a week ago.
Yep, I saw that.
Yeah, so I guess that's now the longest one at Heinz Field, or was someone trying to dig up all of the records. And certainly you were great at making a lot of those kicks, and I wanted to speak about the pressure of kicking in the NFL, not only when you were playing, but now they've moved the extra point attempts back. And it just seems like, you know, every week some of these teams are constantly, you know, recycling kickers, so to speak. We saw Cleveland fire someone. We saw the Vikings go out and get Dan Bailey, formerly of the Cowboys, things of that nature. Can you talk a little bit about the pressure of, you know, just kicking in the NFL and those rule changes, the impact that they have on the game as well?
Yeah, the extra point is tricky. I know you're supposed to make a 33-yard field goal, but, you know, usually in a mentality of an extra point, it's kind of like you don't take it for granted ever, especially if you're the kicker or the team, because you don't want to just not watch it and say, oh, they'll make it, because it doesn't happen all the time. But on the flip side of that, when it was 20 yards, it's like, you know, unless you slip or fall or it's like just horrific conditions outside, you're probably going to make them. You know, there's not too many misses. I mean, there are misses all the time now, and it's not because – of lack of focus. It's a chip shot field goal, but the mentality of an extra point is totally different. And I'm not making excuses for anybody missing them, because I mean it happens, but you got to make those. I mean, those are the ones that make or break games. And so the mentality of it is, those young guys that got released early in the season, they got drafted. I mean, it's a different pressure and it's a different game than college football. It is. I mean, it's a business. There's politics in college football, but they're not. You instantly get fired if you cost your team a game, or you just don't show up and don't play well. It's a cutthroat business. I mean, that's why the average length of any position, in the NFL is, I think, 3 or 3.5 years. That's the average length of a career, and you got some kickers that play 20 years. And you got some that play one game, so there's your averages. So that's the mentality is you don't need to put, like, when Boswell was struggling at the beginning of the season, he was putting too much pressure on himself because he got a contract. And, you know, he's a damn good kicker, or else he wouldn't have been in the Pro Bowl, and because he deserves to be paid. And I'm glad he did get paid. You know, it's good for him. But, I mean, once he settles down, I'm sure he'll be fine. And, you know, you do – it's just a different pressure in the NFL coming from college. And, you know, until you're – I mean, and every kick is a challenge. It's not just, oh, well, I'm kicking good in pregame warm-ups, so I'm sure I'll do great the rest of the way. That's not how it works. I mean, you have to focus on every single one of your opportunities. And because as soon as you lose focus for all of 1.3 seconds, because that's what a field goal snap and hold and kick is, no more than 1.3 seconds. If you lose focus, then you're going to miss. And that's 1.3 seconds you can't get back.
Yeah, there's also something new that I've been seeing in a lot of the NFL stadiums. The Steelers have been doing it too, where they just make the whole scoreboard black, and then it's either a single Steelers logo. And I've only seen a single logo so far this year, but in the past year or two, when I saw this starting to become a trend, they would put like three of them up, and it almost seems like it's kind of like you're kind of trying to guide the kicker and give them like a target to hit. I mean, does that seem plausible?
Yeah, there? Yeah, there's – when I was playing and I'm sure they still do it at the Ravens at Baltimore, they just have a picture of a Raven and a pitch black screen kind of in the middle for them to kick. And then when we were kicking, because you have to look up the uprights to pick your focus point and your target. So, you know, when we were playing, it has zoomed in on your own face. And that was an interesting one, because it's not like, I mean, because you have to look up there and you're like, oh, that's me, you know, right before you're about to kick. I mean, obviously when you're kicking, your head's down, but I mean, initially you're like, crap, that was weird. But and also when see the old Giants stadium and where the Jets they used to play, they used to open up when we were kicking a certain way. There was a tunnel they'd open up and the wind picked up. And jeez. But of course they just did it for our team, not the home team. But
yeah, of course.
So that was interesting. And but you know, it's the scoreboard thing is, I mean, it's to play with your mind. It's mind games. And if you're tough enough and strong enough, then you know it's just another obstacle. But it can kind of throw you off a little bit.
Just like the timeouts, does that stuff actually work? People are always talking about that. You got like the talking heads on TV, always freezing them, always doing this. Is that really getting to anyone's head, or is it just kind of like, okay, I get a few more seconds to kind of relax and compose myself?
I guess it depends on the kicker. I mean, everyone's different. We're a different breed anyway. You know,
I'm getting to that.
So, you know, it's everyone's different. Some are very, very mentally strong, as I was, and some just, you know, I mean, because you got fans and people on the outside, you guys have no idea what they're saying on that field when I'm about to kick or someone's about to kick. I mean, it's not like they're just going to rush and that's the end of the play. Like, they're saying anything and everything about your family and, you know, girlfriend and whatever the other team is out there. It's funny. But, you know, it's really about how mentally strong you are. You know, the whole thing, the only thing I don't like about the icing the kicker part is it's not the actual part where you're getting iced. It's just like if you call a timeout right before the snap, then you kick the ball. And because, you know, mentally you're not just going to say, oh, I'm not going to kick this, because what if you hear a whistle in the crowd or something and they, you know, and you should have kicked it. You know, you just never know. But a lot of times those, you know, go right down the middle, and then you try to do the same thing twice, and it gets tougher. That's the only thing I don't like about that last second timeout kind of thing, right before the snap, because yeah, I just think it kind of takes away a mental edge, because you have to do your job either way, and it's hard to do something perfect twice, you know, back to back.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, we were already talking about, you know, any of the physical stuff and just the repetitions and things like that. It's just, you know, it's one more mile on the odometer, so to speak.
Yep.
So I know you were in town recently. I wanted to talk about our, I'd say, partner, sponsor, presenter of today's show. Kind of hooked us up. You're good friends with the Stiller Gang. And this is for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with I guess I'd say this fan group, they're the band or a collection of people from all over, not only the country, but the world now. And they now, I guess they have as many as 500 members listed as they have in this press release. But I know I met the German chapter guys just a week ago at the last home game against the Falcons. I mean, there's guys from all over. And if you've seen them, it's bandanas. You know, they actually, it's like almost like a movement. And now they have their own beer. And you happened to come into town for the release party. It was about maybe 2 weeks ago, I believe, at Rivertown Brewing. And there's a location there on the North Shore. They have it on tap. They just released the cans Monday, and they're going to be available across Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, and also in your neck of the woods in North Carolina, the Steeler Gang Gold, described as a crisp, clean, golden ale that should appeal to the masses while also satisfying lovers of well-crafted beer. Did you get to sample some of the Steeler Gang Gold?
Yeah, I did. I'm not a beer guy, but I did try it. And I mean, if I was a beer drinker, that would be what I'd drink. I mean, it's kind of similar to, well, I guess it's not similar to anything, but if I had to compare it to something, it would be like a Blue Moon. It's a little bit like that. I mean, it's stronger. It's a strong beer. I know the alcohol in it is I don't want to say the wrong number, but I think it's like 6% or something.
It's close, yeah. It's like 5.7 or 5.8, if I recall.
Yeah, so I mean that's a pretty good amount for a beer. So, but I mean I thought it tasted fine. I mean, it'd be perfect for one of those 70-degree sunny days, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how many more of those we're going to get in Pittsburgh, but if fans are looking for it, yeah, they were canning it last week, but near the end of last week, so there are fresh batches out there. Awesome looking cans too. I haven't gotten a chance to try it yet, but I will by the end of the month. I'll be celebrating my birthday. I'm going to hit up the North Shore and definitely check it out myself. So if you happen to be on the lookout for it, Steeler Gang Gold, I could tell that Jeff, you're still really involved with following the Steelers and everything. Thing like that, there's a big headline out there now. There was something about a while ago in an article Chris Boswell had talked about, you know, the life of a job for a kicker, always looking for a job. We talked about that a little bit here, but something a little different going on in Pittsburgh here is a guy who has paperwork to sign, and you were in kind of a similar situation with the franchise tag, and you signed yours without any lengthy holdouts or anything like that. If you care to describe maybe your situation or the franchise tag and maybe long-term deals and players, the player side of this whole thing, because we all know, like, we get kind of half of the story, but we don't get the full story.
Right. Well, you know, either way, if somebody wants you and they sign you or they're willing to sign you, then that's a positive. I do believe every single player, whether it's a star running back or a kicker or a punter or long snapper or quarterback, everyone deserves to get paid because it's not easy. I understand that there's a lot of money involved in the NFL and professional sports. I get that. But you still deserve to be paid what you're worth, and that's where this whole situation has gone crazy. I don't think it's him. I mean, I think that if you miss training camp and preseason, okay, you've kind of showed the organization how you feel. But then when it's time to play, if you're really your boys with your teammates, you know, $14 million is no chump change. You know, so I think it's time to show up. On the flip side of that, if you don't show up, the last thing you want to do is be, you know, partying in Miami, you know, on Instagram or whatever, because it just doesn't, I mean, because your brothers are out there fighting their tails off. You're still literally part of that team, and it just doesn't look good. But as far as my situation, it was when that came up for me, it was they were going to either sign, they were going to come back to me with a 3-, 4-, or 5-year contract offer. Right before training camp, and then they're also in talks with Casey Hampton. So that being said, I knew one of us was going to get the franchise tag, and just, you know, and he ended up signing a pretty good deal, and I got franchise tag. So I know that's a 1-year deal. It's guaranteed money. It's not guaranteed any time. I promise you that, because that was my last year there. Actually week 10 of that season. And then I went out to the 49ers, but you know, it's like, it was the most money I'd ever gotten paid. But I just wanted longevity because I wanted to hold all records. I wanted to retire in Pittsburgh like everyone wants to retire on their own. Of course, unfortunately, it doesn't happen like that. Happen like that all the time. Once it is a business, and when it's time to when you never know what upstairs is thinking. You know, they're not bad people, but you never know. Like, is this going to be his last game, or if he screws up, are we getting rid of him, or you know, you never know. I mean, so that's why you just have to. I would have never, you know, sat out. I mean, I'm not built like that. Plus, the more I sit out, the more behind I get. I promise you, if Le'Veon Bell does decide to show up, he is not in shape for football. I promise you. He may look good, but you got to get hit, and you got to, you know, he's not playing pickup games of football anywhere. I can promise you that.
No, especially if he's that concerned with his body and everything like that. But, of course, the longevity wasn't there, unfortunately. But does it seem like you have any kind of ill will against the Steelers or organization as far as that? You mentioned it's a business. Certainly, I imagine it was your favorite place to play. You said you went out with the 49ers. I know you had some other offers that you may have not taken. What is the main difference being a Pittsburgh Steeler versus playing anywhere else?
Well, to answer your first question, there is no animosity with me in the organization. I mean, it's a business. Only thing I don't like about, and it's not the Steelers in general, it's just business. It is a business, but I'm a guy that's honest with you, and I just want to be people be honest with me. That's my one big thing is, you know, don't give me the runaround. If I need to get on the phone with my agent, I understand. You know, and just be straight up. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of people, even other organizations that I won't call out, but they did that to me, you know, and I was, you know, I don't get it. I know it's a business. I know it's a cutthroat business, but there's no reason to mislead people in the business, whether it's a player or a coach or a trainer or whatever it is. But to answer your other question, being a Pittsburgh Steeler that's the best franchise in the world. It's not just Pittsburgh, PA. It's everywhere you go, there are tons of fans. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and there are 5 Steeler bars here.
As in almost every town in America.
Right, right. I mean, you go to Mexico, it's all Steeler fans. You go to, even places like Japan and Taiwan and places like that, I mean, they know who my college is. I'm a Tar Heel, and they know exactly who the Steelers are. So there's 2 things that I can carry with me. But, I mean, it's and they're not going to know who – they'll probably know the Cowboys. They'll probably know the Steelers. That's probably it. And, I mean, just those franchises. But, you know, I'm not knocking Dallas, but I just – the way things are run there, obviously, that's why they're not successful. The Rooneys are a different breed, and that's why they're well-respected around the league. And I hated it when – old man Dan passed away. I was up there, and he was one of the best guys I've ever met in my life. He was just older dude, but funny as heck, and, you know, just like a father figure, you know. And I just introduced at a luncheon this past Friday, a few days ago, Bruce Arians. I just introduced him at a luncheon. He was speaking here in Charlotte. And, you know, it's just like it's a family. And that's the one thing about pro sports is a lot of times, you know, when you see the finger pointing, or this guy's max, he's not getting paid, or why they pay him and not me. And, you know, when it's hard to stay a family when pro sports as opposed to college or high school growing up or whatever. Because, you know, some people play the game just for the money. They don't love the game. They just play because they have God given potential. And some people literally lay it on the line all the time. And the one thing I can say, because I was on 4 different teams, and the one thing I can say about the Pittsburgh Steelers for all 8.5 years I was there was as a family. I mean, people with kids that are in their mid-30s or in their 30s with kids and a wife are hanging out with 22-year-olds and trying to teach them the ropes and, you know, build relationships. And, I mean, that didn't happen everywhere. And even some teams were segregated, which is pretty sad. Because, you know, I saw it, I witnessed it, and it was, you know, it was sad. But, I mean, ours was, didn't matter where you're from, what color you were, how old you were, how weird you were, everyone hung out with everyone. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it seems like a reflection of Pittsburgh area itself is just a melting pot of so many people with a variety of backgrounds, even to this day. I mean, the tech sector and everything like that's kind of making its way in, and you get people that travel from all over, you know, not just the United States, but the world, living in Pittsburgh now. So I want to talk about your career a little bit, and obviously you've been back to Heinz Field, I know, at least once, if not more, with the Super Bowl teams they usually bring in, a homecoming week. What kind of feeling is it like coming back now after, you know, several years being away from the team?
You know, it's crazy because I don't go to too many games. I always know, you know, when they're playing and who they're playing, and I watch it on TV. But I mean, some guys, when they're done with football, they're just done with it. I mean, they don't know any scores. They hear news through SportsCenter or something, but they don't watch any games. I know some people like that. But I watch the games. I think LeVon Kirkland actually told me that when he was done playing. He obviously coached as well, but when he was done playing, he just doesn't watch football. He watches college. But the December 2nd game, I think, to play in the Chargers, we get honored. It's a 10-year anniversary of Super Bowl 43. So we get honored that game, and that'll be cool because not only is it cool to get on that field again, but it's going to be really cool to reunite with some guys that may have changed their cell phone numbers, and I was at the other one 3 years ago as well, and that was cool. But I have 27 people going to the Panthers and Steelers Thursday night game.
Nice.
I mean, because most of them from here that are Steeler fans, and but they're always very, very welcoming. I mean, if I need tickets, I call the ticket guy. I mean, it's not like a hassle. It's not a pain in the butt. The fans, I mean, I miss half the game because I'm taking pictures and signing autographs, and that's fine. I mean, it doesn't bother me because, I mean, that's fun. It makes you relevant again. You know, it makes you feel relevant. And I will say, though, every time I go to a game, I look down there and I still look around and say, man, I could still be doing this.
That's pretty awesome. There are guys that are like well north of 40 still doing it.
Right. And, I'm 30 and I'm almost 40. And I know my body is not perfect by any means, but I know that barring a terrible injury or something, I can still do it. And, but that's hard sometimes, but you know, every great thing comes to an end in life. And that's just the way it is. So you learn to accept it, or you just don't ever go back to a game. Those are your two options. I wish when Boswell was struggling, I could have got his phone number from somebody, but I wouldn't want them to think I was going to get in his ear and make him worse. Because, you know, people think that. Mm-hmm. I want the guy to succeed. You know, he's in a great place. He's very happy there, it seems. And, you know, I like people to have success. You know, I mean, he's not an arrogant guy. I know him, you know, and I wish I'd had his number so I could have reached out and maybe helped, maybe not. But those are the things that, you know, I think of. And when I go back, it's the same kind of thing. It's like you kind of get the chills because, you know, you've been there, done that. But on the flip side of that, you're in the stands watching now. And so you just kind of accept it for what it is.
With that in mind, we talk about just the homecoming, thinking back and reflecting on your career, do you have a favorite moment, maybe one or two, that really stand out to you, like, this is it, so, you know, this was the biggest moment of my NFL career?
Well, my first regular season game, because I played in the preseason in New Orleans in 2002, my rookie year, my first regular season game. Was week 10 in Pittsburgh against Cincinnati. It's in November. And that was the coolest thing because, I mean, winning Super Bowls, I can always go say that, yes. But that was the best because that was the first tryout that I went to where the only thing I brought was something to sleep in, toothbrush, toothpaste, and the outfit I wore. And all the other ones, they said, you know, pack a bag for a week or 5 days, you know, in case we sign you. And so I always had other clothes. Well, all I had was this North Carolina Tar Heels outfit, and that's all my parents had because we didn't know which team I'd ever make it on, you know, if I would. And so on the first game, during one of the TV timeouts, I was uh, they were uh, I was looking. It wasn't real hard to find my parents because they were in Carolina Blue in a black and gold town. And I looked up and I waved to my mom, dad, and sister. And I don't know. It hit me that I think the crowd thinks I'm trying to get them into it. And because I was out there, we were. It was a kickoff and it was a TV timeout, so I was just waving at them. And all of a sudden, they started chanting my name. And it was the first game ever in that stadium. And I was like, dude, this is wild, man. You know, like, it was cool in college, but it was more of a wine and cheese crowd where I played. You got some hardcore fans. And when you hear your name echoing throughout the whole stadium, and all I was trying to do is wave to my mom and dad and sister and say, hey, I made it, you know. And that was one of the coolest things. To this day, when I tell the story, I get the chills. And every time I do motivational speaking now, too. And every time I tell people that story, and I'm like, you know, because I usually throw in the mix talking about family. So then I'll go into that. It's the best feeling to know that, wow, I was just trying to wave to my parents and my sister as if they were the only ones in the crowd. And I guess somebody started the chant, which was pretty cool. But other than that, I'd say the one kick that sticks out the most. I always remember the ones I miss, of course, but. The New York Jets playoff game when it was like, you know, negative 10 degrees at home at Heinz Field. We were 15-1 that year. We had no business almost losing to them. We went to overtime. Their kicker missed a couple, and I made a 33-yarder. And in the locker room, after getting mauled on the field, you know, because that was one of the longest games I've ever been a part of and coldest. And Jerome Bettis jumped in my arms. And, I mean, I'm not a small guy, but he was definitely not small. So, but that was, unfortunately, the next week it came to an end. New England beat us. But that was one of the coolest things because I'm like, this Hall of Famer just jumped in my arms and said, thank you. Thank you for giving us a chance to continue the playoffs. And, I mean, that was one of the coolest things that ever happened in my life, not just in football. And I'll never forget that either.
Yeah, actually, we're pretty close in age. I'm going to be 37 here in a couple of weeks. So I was in college, and I could specifically remember when you first came on the scene with the Steelers, even back then, they were struggling with some kickers, and it was like, geez, just get a guy who can make some kicks. And here you came along, and you stuck around for a long time, especially in NFL years. Is like, you know, 3 years, like you were saying, is like dog years for most careers. So I love having you on the show, too, because there's always like – that cliche you hear on TV and they say kickers are people too. And you're talking about signing autographs. And I was telling you a little bit off the air, but I started this thing. My wife bought me this football years ago, Steelers football with a white panel on it. And I just never felt compelled to go track down autographs. I tell people all the time, I'm not a big autograph seeker, but I'm going to have to find you one of these days. Cause I already got Swisham and Boswell on it. It's my kicker ball. That's what I call it. It's my conversation piece. But, I could just picture you today. Everybody remembers the dyed hair. It was like, look, excuse me for saying this, almost looked like at one point, I think your graphic that was on TV looked like you stuck your finger in like one of the sockets or something, and it just was like out there, man. With all these celebrations in the NFL and stuff like that, would you have like a game winner like that? Would you have like this kind of crazy celebration? They got everything choreographed now. Could you see yourself with like Juju Smith-Schuster or Antonio Brown or one of these guys dancing around?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty you know, I have a good time, and I wasn't ever really a celebrator like that because I'm the kind of guy that says, you know, that's a little bit arrogant. I'm not against them. I don't care. I mean, some of them are funny too. They're all choreographed, like you said. But it's like, you know, for a kicker to do something like that, that next kick is what matters. You know, that's like I was telling these people in Charlotte, because obviously Graham Gano I was at the game when he hit that 63-yarder. And that's all I talked about for a week. And I said, you know what? I'm sure he's on a high right now, but all that matters is that first kick in that Washington Redskins game yesterday. And he missed an extra point. And I said, so he's not the reason they lost, and they're not going to blame him, but they're going to talk about how can you make a 63-yarder than the next game you can't make an extra point. And because that's how people think. They just think that, oh, if he can do that, he'll never miss. That's not how it works. I mean, we're still human. But I don't know. I mean, I've never been a real I mean, I celebrate with my teammates. I give them the praise because they put me in a position to kick a field goal or a game winner. But I can see some of the personalities like Juju. I don't know him, but he seems like a, you know, classy, good guy, you know, and he's a young kid. But, I mean, I could see myself probably doing something with him because he would be the kind of guy I'd hang out with.
We got to make that happen when you're back at Heinz Field. maybe you're somewhere along the goal or the end zone or something like that. One question we always ask about nicknames. This comes from Brian, my co-host, who couldn't join us today, but he wanted to know who coined the nickname Quadzilla. And he also had Skippy on here. I'm not even familiar with Skippy. What's Skippy?
Yeah, Skippy is this guy. I think he's still in Pittsburgh on the radio or TV. Tim Benz. He was on ESPN radio then. He said, "Oh, I heard that you got I heard that your teammates in college called you Skippy." And I said, "Dude, I don't know what that is. I mean, like, usually if you've had a nickname, you've heard it before. First time I ever heard that." And then I'm walking around the city and going to dinners and, you know, go to the mall or something, and people are like, "Oh, that's Skippy." You know, I'm like, and I knew they were talking about me, but it was kind of like, God, I hope they don't get mad if I don't turn around, because that's kind of an awkward name. But I just don't know where it came from. So it would mean more if you know, it was like an actual nickname and someone didn't just think they heard that, you know. But the Quadzilla was Josh Miller. He gave me that. He was our punter when I first got in the NFL. And I still talk to Josh. He does a podcast. He's been on the radio for years, and he's a great guy. And shoot, I even talked the other day. He sent me a video of his son kicking, and he said, "What can you point out that needs to be fixed?" And I mean, that was his own son that's already kicking, you know, 45-yard field goals.
That's pretty cool. And,
yeah. So I mean, he coined that one. It makes more sense because my legs are like tree trunks, so that does make sense.
Definitely. And I didn't want to forget October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, NFL kind of expanding that now to be, you know, detection of just about anything. We've changed all of our stuff over to pink, very important to myself and several others here at Steel City Underground. My mother, early detection breast cancer survivor. I know you have some causes that are important to you as well. Care to share those with our audience?
Yeah, October's always, you know, as I was introducing Bruce Arians, he's he survived prostate cancer. So I thought, you know, and I told everybody in the room, I said, you know, I'm very fortunate to my parents and my sister and my grandmother are all very healthy. I'm pretty healthy. And we've had some scares, but nothing with cancer. And that's it's a terrible ailment, you know. So that's always. And I have a buddy that's battling. He's terminally ill with cancer, and you know, I've been beside him. He lives in South Carolina. He's about an hour and a half, 2 hours from me, and he's I mean, I met him at men's fantasy camp when I was coaching it, and he was one of the guys. And he was sick then, but not too bad. And I mean, he's still fighting it. And he was only given 2 years to live, and it's been eight. So he's a fighter, that's for sure. But it's a very very it's a very, very bad disease, all forms of it. But what I'm the president of the of a foundation here in Charlotte, North Carolina, which the president, I'm not the president, the charity is named after is the owner of the dealership I worked at. And that is for you single mothers and kids in need, and also homeless pets in the two counties that we live in here in Charlotte, Mecklenburg and Union County. So we do a lot of stuff for them. I mean, we're doing like America's Got Talent kind of thing at the comedy club to raise money. And we go around to basically homeless people, homeless children, not people, homeless children that are being housed in certain areas of Charlotte and even, you know, the other county as well. And we pass out, you know, turkeys at Thanksgiving, Christmas presents from, you know, we buy a bunch of stuff at Walmart. So, I mean, I do a lot of stuff. I mean, I do miss that about the NFL, though, because it was like three times a week I was somewhere. And I will be at Charlie Batch's. I think he has this charity event after that Panthers game. So I'm actually going to be there for that.
That is all great stuff. Make sure you follow Jeff. Jeff, you're on Twitter, Instagram, things of that nature here?
Just Twitter, at The Real Jeff Reed, and Facebook, of course.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Not a fake Jeff Reed, at least. There's some of those accounts floating around, too. So
Yeah. It's pretty sad. But mine, you know, mine has like the Life Changer background, and that's actually me. Okay. And I don't control that. I'm on LinkedIn and stuff like that, but I'm not on Instagram.
Okay. Sounds good there. So make sure you keep an eye on Jeff's Twitter account for any of those events that may be coming up if you care to get involved, especially since we know there's a lot of Steeler fans down in the North Carolina area or others that would make the trip, actually. I had one more bonus question for you because I told Jeff I wouldn't let him know what the bonus question was right until this moment. It's something we ask of all of our guests. It sounds kind of scary putting this out here, but I'd like to get a genuine answer. I don't want you to think about it. Just the first thing off the top of your head, tell us something that no one else would know about you. And it doesn't have to be a skeleton in the closet, of course, but hobby or whatever. Some guys like to cook, whatever it may be.
Man, that's a tough one. Let's see. You could probably guess that. But the first thing that came to my mind is I played 15 years of soccer, and obviously being a kicker, there's probably a soccer background there, but I still hold the some records at my high school. And, you know, I'm a motivational speaker. Most people probably didn't know that because I speak to the sheriff's department here. You know, I do some introductions. I'd MC some events. I do that. Of course, I coach kickers and punters. Privately, obviously they're in season now, so not too much right now. And one thing that nobody knows, and I've never released it, and it's not a done deal or anything, but it's a good possibility I may be coaching at Texas Tech at some point.
Oh, well, best of luck to you there.
Yeah, not the head coach. I just know the head coach very well, and if he continues to do well as he is doing, then you know, maybe next year. We'll see.
Special assistant, special teams coordinator. Yeah, it would be
more along the lines of assistant special teams coach first, because I've never coached at that level, and I'd have to, you know, earn my rank up, you know. So, but absolutely. I mean, it's like I said, it's not set in stone. It's just something that's I've been talking to him about.
Absolutely. Well, definitely great having you on. I didn't think it would be this long, Jeff, but like I said, we start talking and it just keeps going. So I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule once again to join us here.
I appreciate you guys having me on too. And anything you need, you got my information.
Absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is a two-time Super Bowl winning kicker for Pittsburgh Steelers, second all-time and leading scoring, Jeff Reed. And once again, thank you to Jeff for joining us on today's program. Folks, look forward to some of your comments and also have some other stuff coming here during the Steelers bye week. Be sure to keep an eye out as we have a few more guests and special episodes while we try and fill not having football for roughly 2 weeks. Until next time, my name is Joe Kuzma. Our guest was Jeff Reed at The Real Jeff Reed on Twitter. Be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.